You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, welcome back to the second hour of Eye on the Ball here on Wednesday afternoon here at Trusted Local News and Talk. I think we're going to go to the phone line now. Jim Rosborough, are you there?
I am here, Steve. How are you?
Fine. Glad to have you on the show. Good. I wanted to have you so we can have you for some time to talk about the good old days and see how you guys are already getting ready for Pima Women. Are you kind of already started that with some workouts or whatever?
Well, I also want you down the line a little bit now. I don't know if you've seen or read Andre Iguodala's book, but I'd like to hit on that a little bit.
Yes, too, we will. We will.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now, Steve, I don't know if you knew. I had a knee replacement that got infected, so it kind of set me back 6 weeks.
Wow.
I was out with the girls. They started a couple weeks after school was done, and they're in the weight room with Carla Garrett and lifting and running and so on and so forth. Not all of them, Steve. It's not necessarily mandatory, but if you're in town, they go. So, yeah, we're getting ready for next year. They've had good workouts over the summer, really not a lot of basketball stuff, but more conditioning. We've got some good people back. We have some really good people coming in, and I think, the goal is one of these years, clearly I'd like to do it, but I'd also like to see Todd get a national title. He's been to the national tournament, I think, 6, 7, 8 times and finished second once, third a couple years ago when we were there together, and then this last year, fifth. So they're getting ready. And again, Steve, we've got some good people back, and I think our expectations are really, really high. Of course, we lose J.J. Nakai, who was first-team All-American, and Sean Abrebiescus, who was second-team All-American, and they'll be tough to replace. But again, we've got some good people coming back, Steve.
You've been a coach for a long, long time. You had some great years with Lute and U of A. These women that you coach, though, have probably put you on an enjoyable ride the last few years because they've been so successful, and it's probably a different type of joy that brings to the coaching world for you. Yes?
Yeah, I'd say that's absolutely true. This will be, I think, my 46th year, Steve, and I've coached men and women out at Pima. We had a good year, 2009-2010, with the men. I think you're aware, I'm sure you're aware, that I coached down at University of Arizona with the women's tennis team for
yes.
4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And really, really enjoyed that. And then 31 years of Division I men's coaching. But to be very honest with you, and maybe it's a stage of life. I'm not 26 anymore, not even 36, Steve, but it's really, really enjoyable, and they're really good kids. They want to work. They do listen. They say thank you. I tell them they don't need to say thank you. I mean, our job's to coach you. You don't need to say thank you for, us doing our job. But they're really, really enjoyable. They really work hard, and we've had some success. It's a tough league with four big school, community college big schools, including Cochise. It's always loaded. And it's really, really a good league. So, if you don't do a pretty good coaching job and you don't have pretty good kids, you're going to get killed. But, it's really, really, really enjoyable. And for this stage of my life/career, I'm out there 6, 7 hours a day. We're in season. We're involved 6 days a week. Some of those long bus trips, we do bus over to Yuma. But Steve, it's really enjoyable, and we've been very, very fortunate to have really good kids in the program that can play. So it's been a lot of fun.
I don't know if you can answer this or how you can answer this, but let me ask it anyway. You've been with some of the most elite players at U of A, the Andres and the Gilberts and all them. They have their egos, and you had to deal with that as well. But these when you go on these road trips, these women and the men that you had to coach, it's a totally different ego. Yes?
Yeah, I think that's true. When you're at the level that Arizona has been for years, and it was when we were there, and before I got there, it's just a whole different ball of wax, Steve. I mean, the kids come to these programs, and you know this very well. They come to these top programs, Duke, North Carolina, us, UCLA, when they were in their heyday. They're not quite there now, but maybe they'll get back. Indiana in their heyday, Michigan State now. I mean, the kids go there for one reason, and yeah, it's education. I do understand that, but they're going there for one reason, and that's to get good coaching and to give themselves a chance to move on to the next level, to get to the NBA, and, you know, finally, and Andre makes a great point of this, finally be rewarded for, you know, something that they've done all their life and they've given their bodies to and everything, and that is to play basketball. So it's really a whole different mindset. And, you know, the interesting thing, and we've probably said this before, that, you know, even the guy that's number 10 or 11, now I'm not saying Josh Pastner or John Ash, they didn't quite think it, or Jason Stewart, but even our 8th, 9th, and 10th guy kind of thought, well, I got a chance. Even if I don't go to the NBA, maybe I can go overseas and play. I mean, the mindset is
sure.
Just, it's some cases very interesting, kind of mind-boggling as to what their expectations are. But on the other hand, they do love basketball. They do want to continue playing, and you know, it's tough to come to the end of that career, whether you're starting at Arizona or you're 6th, 7th, or 8th guy. You know, of interest, and I think you remember a couple of years ago, we had an All-American guard out at Pima, Sydney Stallworth.
Mm-hmm.
And she went up to University of Alaska Anchorage, had a very, very good career, and she's hoping this year to go overseas and play. And I hope she does, Steve. I it would be great if she's going to ever do it. This is the time. But that's a tough call. She's about a 5'3 point guard, and the realism is that it's going to be pretty darn tough. But on the other hand, she wants to go, and so, you know, we'll see. But it's a whole different mindset with the top kids. They all think they can go play.
So you've been in the business 40-some years, at least this level, number 30-some years at the top level. When did it change? Because you're right. Everybody who shows up and signs a letter of intent thinks that they're going to be the next whatever and make some money, even though they are the second string way deep coming off the bench.
Yeah, I think with the advent of all the social media, Steve, and I mean, you know, you can't go a day or a night without for sure NBA stuff, games on TV, you know, all the trade stuff, now all this free agency stuff that has just gone on over the last several weeks. But I really would think, and I'm trying to put my finger on it too, Steve, but I don't think you were there in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, when the Lukes and Richards mm-hmm. were there. I mean, I don't think it was so prevalent in their mind. But then all of a sudden, you know, several years later, the computers come more into vogue, the phones that have all this information on them, and I mean, they're all mm-hmm. constantly on their phones and knowing what's going on, and you know, the NBA stuff just really jumped into their heads. So, I mean, if I was to guess, I would say sometime in the 2002 through 2005 era when all this social media started. And it's really, really changed, you know, a lot of how kids think. And, you know, every single move that they make is categorized. All the pro teams, you know, they have access to everything. So, I mean, it's changed considerably. And I've told my wife and or my family, you know, when it's really been a wonderful career, Steve. I would never change one single second. But back when we were at the University of Iowa, we were all kind of naive guys and jumped into it, and it was kind of fun, and you're out recruiting and meeting people. And, you know, we were younger. I would agree with that. But, you know, that seemed to be kind of the time when it was a little more pure. You know, we had good kids, we had good teams, we coached them, but maybe it was a little more pure back then. And then it just kind of gradually is move to this multi-billion-dollar business-type model that mm-hmm. you know the NCAA is involved in. It's a changed thing these days, Steve. And from a personal standpoint, I'm very glad I'm out with Todd at Pima. I'll be very honest about that.
No question, you're avoiding a lot of the big stuff. Let's transition from there into Andre. I'm sure. Did you read the book already? I'm sure you've seen some expert excerpts.
Yeah, it came in the mail yesterday. In fact, my sons, when they were here, ordered it for me. So it came in the mail yesterday, sat on my porch and read about two and a half hours right away yesterday. I've had it with me all day today. I went out for dinner with a friend tonight who's a big North Carolina Tar Heel fan and made him, you know, read that excerpt on the back page. It's phenomenal. And obviously Andre had this guy that helped him write it, but I found it very, very interesting, and I don't know if you've had a copy, but I went right to the Arizona part. I was going to be interested as to how Andre looked back and observed those years, and then he's just gotten traded, where I'm reading, just gotten traded from the 76ers, where he was for 8 years, to the Nuggets. I'd kind of forgotten that, and then I assume after this part it'll be on to the Warriors and the great success he had there. But I'll tell you, he's a smart cookie, and I don't know if you're aware, he is the vice president of the Players Association.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So whenever this other guy, whoever it is, his term is up, Andre will take over as head of the Players Association. He's very, very sharp, and if you have read it, Steve, or if not, it's very, very insightful. I haven't come across anything that I disagreed with at all. It's really insightful.
Right, right. Didn't you, I assume that you went to his wedding in it was Cabo, correct?
Yeah, I did not go. No, I did not go. We did see him out at Luke Walton's wedding. He was out there. And then my son is getting married, and Andre, as far as we know, is going to come to that. My son Greg and Andre became pretty good friends in college. So I think he's going to come to Greg's wedding. But he really has some good insight. And you know, Steve, the thing I've kind of thought about this while reading, if all the kids in college basketball were this smart and this insightful as to the business model and really how they're being taken advantage of, there might not even be NCAA basketball games. They'd all say, the heck with this, and we're forming our own league and so on and so forth. But
don't you think that that's possible down the road?
Well, I mean, Steve, if the NCAA, and this was interesting, so I saw this online today, too. There's some state legislator out in California that has submitted a bill that's about to be passed where all the student-athletes in California have the right to, you know, use their likeness to make money. And I think maybe they put it in a trust or something. But the NCAA, well, give us time. We need to get together and form a committee. And so, come on. I mean, the more they stumble around and don't come up with some fair treatment for these student athletes, men and women, we're not just talking men and women, I would say that has a great likelihood to happen. And now I think they're giving high school kids, if I'm not mistaken, a chance to, well, a couple kids are going directly to Europe this year. I think one of the guys that was coming to Arizona is going directly to Europe. And I think they're giving high school kids now the chance to go right into the D League or G League or whatever they're calling it as well. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to really have to take a look at it, or, you know, there's going to be some sort of a major upheaval, and, you know, who knows where that'll go.
So if you read the book, and this will probably be the last question before we take a break, I'm hoping that you can stick with me for another break after this, but and I'm sure you read this if it involved Arizona, it's not about education, it's about sports. We help with ticket sales, TV rights, jersey sales, concessions, branding, enrollment, and we help with recruiting. We were basically part of the marketing and administration departments. That was a large part of the reason I began to think about leaving college early.
Yeah. Well, you tell me, Steve. You were around it very close. You tell me what you disagree with.
He's right on the money, baby.
Yeah,
he is exactly on the money.
We've talked on this before. In 1997, we qualified for the Final Four. And the next 2 days later, Nike sends about 37 boxes of some brand new shoes that had never been anywhere in the country. They were, you know, you remember a kind of a cool blue color, sparkling blue or something.
The Bibby. It was the Bibby.
These guys have them on, and the next thing, those are selling like wildflowers. And the other thing is, Steve, if you look at the pictures in the book of Andre's, he's got one great shot of a dunk in his Arizona uniform, that great uniform that had cats on the side. It was probably the best uniform, in my view, in the history of college. And you still see kids all over the place wearing those shorts. And so that was all part of the success and, you know, everything of all these kids. And then they're still selling those shorts all over, too. Kind of amazing.
Right. No. When I saw some of the excerpts on that, I'm saying this guy is hitting it on the money. I don't know what kind of reaction you're going to get, but he's very, very candid of what his thoughts were.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Can you take a break and come back?
Yeah, I sure can.
Okay,
yeah,
let's take a break here. We'll have some fun going back and reminisce about some of the crazy characters that Roz had to deal with on the court and off the court here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera, and on the phone we have Jim Rosborough, the current assistant women's basketball coach at Pima, longtime U of A assistant under Lute for a long time. So let me kind of go back to some of my time with you guys. One of the eras that I really enjoyed, because great guys, probably undersold in its success, were the 92 to 96, Damon, Khalid, JB, Corey, McLean, Reggie, that group, because they're just good dudes who played basketball together, and they played it well together. Would you agree?
Yeah, and I think, one of the things in looking back to that era, Steve, is in 1994 we went to the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure anybody really has given the credit to that group that should be given. I mean, we went to the three-guard offense, you know, with Damon and Khalid and Reggie, and then Joseph Blair was playing, Rayos. I think Ben Davis was there. It was really, really a good team, and really good guys, and kind of undersung in Arizona sports history.
Yeah, well, you had Kansas on the ropes. You had Michael Dickerson hit that shot for the 2-for-1. You're beating them again.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It was a good team. You know, and the, a couple interesting things out of that era. Everybody you ever have talked to since absolutely hated to play against Joseph Blair. I mean, he was a big, burly, you know, he was 6'10", 250, 260. They hated to play against him. I mean, he was rough. He was knocking the heck out of them. And Ben Davis was there during that time, and they hated to go up against Ben. I mean, he was not quite as big as Joseph, but he was a tough, hard-nosed kid, too. And then, I think it's kind of unfair to brand him Mr. Obnoxious, but Reggie Gary was a tough son of a gun, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he could go out there and guard anybody from a 1 to a 3, maybe even get switched on to a 4 once in a while, and he was a tough kid. And then, obviously, Damon Khalid. But, you're right, Steve, just kind of a good era. Corey was coming off the bench doing a great job, started a few games, and Corey's the first to tell you that when we were at the Final Four and lost to Arkansas, that he was the most valuable player on the floor. All you got to do is ask Corey, and he'll tell you, Steve. So, but in any event, yeah, it was a fun group. Joe McLean, who now has become very, very successful in his professional life, and yeah, it was a good group. Michael Dickerson was there.
Yeah, Miles was a freshman.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was really, really a good group of guys, and they had fun. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Steve, Calvin Ifan was with us for mm-hmm. a couple years in that era. One of the great stories is we were at Stanford, and we went out the night before a game to eat at a nice restaurant downtown Palo Alto there. And one of our managers goes into the restroom, and here's Michael Dickerson and Calvin Ifan with their shirts unbuttoned and off their shoulders, and they're in there flexing to see who's got the biggest amount of muscle that they've gained since they've been in Arizona. It's one of the famous stories of Arizona basketball lore that people really don't know about. But it was a fun group, and they enjoyed each other and played well and had a lot of fun.
We'll kind of go back and talk about some players, but let me tell you something. You did not coach during the Sean Elliott era, right? Correct?
No, so, I came
so
right after that.
I think that in your time in that era that we just spoke, in my mind, and I won't give the name away, Sean is clearly the best player to ever play here. Who would be your number two?
Well, I would think you'd probably have to look at all the stats and the success and everything else and probably say Khalid, or I guess I'd say Damon. Khalid not
yeah.
far behind,
yeah.
But Damon was... Boy, he was awfully good, and then went to the Raptors, had a great career. I think he was Rookie of the Year, his first year in the league. So I would say him. You can't deny that Bibby had some great success and some of the others, but I think I'd probably have to say Damon, in the time I was there, was probably the best overall kid that I coached.
Yeah, no question. I had Greg on the show about a month ago, and we agreed. And I've always said Damon was number two. After that, you can kind of go with Khalid and all that. And I also said, who was the most underrated player, I think, in my time here, and who doesn't get a lot of praise? And to me, it came quickly, and I say this all the time, Chris Mills.
Yeah, he was awfully good. And the thing I liked about him, Steve, is, he transferred into us, and he knew what was at stake. He wanted to be an NBA guy. He came to practice every day, went hard, absolutely hard, never a word out of him of discontent or looking out of the corner of his eyes or anything at you. He was there. Well, it was a business deal for Chris, and he took care of his academics that he needed to do, and Andre addresses that. You know, so many of these guys are just there staying eligible, but Chris was okay as a student, but he was really a dedicated player. Really worked hard in practice, just, you know, knew where he wanted to be. The thing I really kind of felt bad for Chris was when he got done with us, all the projections were you're going to go, you know, top five, top seven, five, ten, and I top 10. And I think he dropped down maybe out of the top 14. I don't know how far. Now, he had a spectacular NBA career, but I always felt bad about that. You know, he was kind of this typical agent thing, telling him all this stuff, where he was going to go, and it didn't quite work. But he was a very, very good player for us and tough as nails. I mean, yeah. They hated to play against him, too.
Yeah, Steve. No question, a tough guy. Hey, I want you to tell me this story because I've written about it. I want to get it from your eyes. One day, practice, Gene Edgerson's there, and of course Gilbert Arenas is there doing what he always does, and they got into it, or we're going to get into it. I guess that Arenas had maybe put the flat tire in Edgerson's tires in his car, and Edgerson wanted to beat the crap out of him, and you had to settle the fight, or not fight, but the possible commotion, and Lute comes in and had to ask what's going on, and you had to tell him, and whatever. Was that true?
Yeah, somewhat true. Now, I don't know about the car tire thing. I may have heard some pieces of that. I don't remember that, but they just didn't get along very well for some reason. Gilbert was a little outspoken, as you know, and Gene was a tough kid. And
was
so
the
and so
was,
forth, so.
Was the older veteran, and the kid was, you know, talking a lot of crap.
Well, I mean, Gilbert, you know, anything would come out of his mouth, but there's some truth in that, and, you know, they got up into McHale and so on, and got settled down, and everything was okay. But, yeah, there's some validity to that story. If you've written about it, you've probably pretty much got it accurate.
Right,
they
right.
Were, yeah, but it was, you know, I don't remember it as carrying on after we got down on the practice floor or anything else. And, you know, guys were teammates and probably got in the locker room and maybe a little jawing. I don't even know about that, but it was over pretty quickly.
Right. You know? No, because there was the big brother, Gene, trying to control the younger brother, Arenas. And, you know, that was impossible. That was impossible with Arenas. But, no, you were the police guy. You were the good cop. You were the good cop and made these guys hum and work together really well.
Well, tried to. You know, we were fortunate to have good kids, and I think, you know, the more you're around this game, and I just read somewhere recently that some of the great coaches, all they talk about is team, team, team.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the team. You can talk about anything else. It's about the team, and they just, you know, talk about this all the time to their players, and I think a pretty good job of that happened at Arizona. I mean, you're not going to be successful like we were. I think 16, well, and this is not about me at all, Steve, but 16 of the 18 years I was there, we had the best winning percentage in the country, just by a hair over Duke, but still. And that doesn't happen just by accident. You know, you have to have good players. They've got to play as a team, have to have good coaching, dedicated to the goal of winning as a team and everything. So, yeah, it was a good era, and a lot of very good players came through there. And, I mean, you know that even now they're getting kids into the NBA, and Andre will probably go for one more year, a 15-year career. Jason Terry just got out. So, yeah, there were a lot of good kids, Steve.
Another one of those years was, I thought, to me, still the best team that Arizona's ever had was 2001 with Gilbert and Jason and Luke and Richard and Lauren, Michael Wright, those guys. Just to me, it was just a fantastic. Obviously, ran into a buzzsaw of Duke, but just you know, could go to toe to toe with
Steve,
Duke.
Now let's get and I don't mind saying this. I wouldn't say this all the time, but I would say yeah, we ran into a buzzsaw in Duke, and then
the referee.
All everybody talked about. Yeah, we talked next summer. It was the worst refereed championship game in history. So you know, you've seen that famous picture of the Duke players and the referees, somebody superimposed the referees, and they're all there hugging after the game. It was brutal. Now, Duke was a good team. They had some really, really good players, but I think I would agree with you in terms of talent from Lauren at 7, Michael Wright, Tougher Nails, Luke, Richard Gilbert, Jason, Eugene Edgerson was still mm-hmm. there. Justin yes. Wessel was there. It was a good team. It was a deep team. So, yeah, that was... Yeah, probably as good a team as has been there, to be honest.
With the asterisk that Gilbert was hurt and so was Luke in that championship game.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. If Gilbert went out Sunday night, he couldn't practice that afternoon, our last Sunday practice, and he went out that night. Somebody got him into a local high school gym, and he tried to shoot a little bit and just couldn't get his arm right, or probably his right arm, up to shooting position. He tried to play a little bit the next day, but just was not at all 100%. So that was too bad. Luke had a cracked thumb and was trying to play and couldn't tie his own shoes and all kinds of stuff. So
right.
that
right.
was a good team, no question.
Yeah, probably the best team I think there's ever been. And then, of course, let's talk about a player or two on that team. Lauren Woods, I thought, was a fantastic center, temperamental, obviously. But how was it coaching him?
Well, I mean, it was Steve. It was a joint thing. I mean, we were all involved—the head coach and the assistants—and you know, Lauren was a little temperamental. And you may have even been there. There were some Saturday morning scrimmages where Lute had to stop
yep.
it, and
mm-hmm.
you know, he'd go sit up in the bleachers there and blast Lauren a little bit. But you know, Lauren was—I think he was a pretty good kid. I think he was a sensitive kid. I think he was a reasonably—I think he was a quite intelligent guy. And again, he knew why he was there. He worked hard. Now, the thing, and I think you knew this, he got a what's the disease you get down there?
The heat. Valley fever.
So he had to have surgery for that, and yet he came back from that and performed very well. I personally liked Lauren. I thought he was a good kid, and he listened and so on. He was fine. But again, maybe a little temperamental, maybe, you know, got into it a little bit with, you know, not quite paying attention. But he was fine. He was a good young man.
Still had one of the best games I've ever seen with the 14 blocks, the triple-double that he had against Oregon.
Yeah, and then wasn't there were a couple series in there where it was one block, so that Oregon got it back, boom, another block. I think a couple times he had three right in a row.
Right.
Now, that
mm-hmm.
was pretty amazing. But,
yeah, yeah.
Well, again, the kid was 7 feet tall and long arms and good timing, and he was a good, smart basketball player too. So,
right.
yeah, not
right.
surprising.
Well, you had so many great kids. And Luke, you know, I think that was one of the years where you guys were in Washington. You guys were in Washington, didn't like the way they played at Washington, and then got to Washington State, had beaten them a number of times, and Luke finally said, you guys aren't paying attention to us. Why don't you guys coach your own team? And
yeah.
Luke had to run the show.
Well, you know where that happened, Steve. That happened. We got from Seattle we flew into Spokane. So we were over at the, I think we practiced at the Gonzaga practice facility or secondary gym or something. And so you guys know what you're doing. Ricky, you write up the practice schedule. I think that's who wrote it up. Now, that's amazing in itself that Ricky wrote it up. But Ricky wrote up the practice schedule. They got out there, had a decent, you know, and every once in a while it was tempting to stand up and get involved and say, nope, stay down, don't talk to them, stay seated and so on. And then, yeah, I went out and probably played pretty well. I'm sure we beat them, but probably played pretty well. That was an interesting approach to it, too.
There was no
getting involved. Let them run it. Let them do it. They got all the answers, so let them do it. Yeah,
yeah,
that was a pretty good move.
Because you brought him up, and what a great kid Ricky was. He took some abuse for his 5 years here. But, you know, to me, he was kind of like one of the great athletes that never got credit for it, because he was a scratch golfer. He could play golf, he could play ping pong, he was a bowler. He was one of those jack of all trades, but you know, still one of those guys.
Well, and he hit, in my mind, one of the most iconic shots in my time there. We were playing out in the garden, and I think we'd lost
yes.
most everybody from the year before. Maybe that's when you know, Michael Wright and all those guys left. So we're playing out in the garden. I think it was against Maryland, and they were maybe the defending champs. I'm not sure, but it was at Florida. I don't know who it was, Steve. You would remember. He comes across the lane with a Larry Bird running hook, and, I mean, everybody on the bench just goes crazy. I mean, it was a heck of a shot. He was he was really an undersung player. He was a great, great shooter. He was intelligent. He worked hard. He could run the floor. He was, yeah, you're right there too, Steve. He was a undersung player, very, very talented. I liked Ricky a lot.
Right, and one of the good guys too, and one of your party favorites, just by heart and where he came from, Michael Wright. You know what? Didn't say much. You know, and but when he said something, you better have listened.
Yeah, he was tough as nails. He grew up on the West Side, went to Farragut High School in Chicago, and I think this was in his junior year before. Well, we were involved a bit as when he was a junior, but he and a couple teammates were coming out after a game or something out of the Farragut High School gym, and somebody quite a long range away takes a shot, probably at Michael, and hits one of the teammates in the heel, which wrecked his season. But, I mean, it was a tough, tough neighborhood on the west side of Chicago. Farragut was decent academically, but pretty tough neighborhood, and Michael grew up in that area. Tough situation growing up, but came out to Arizona and handled himself really well. I mean, he was very coachable. You never had to tell him things twice. Guys absolutely loved him. Now, they I'm sure when they were away with us, from us, the coaches, they had a lot more fun with Michael. But he was a tough competitor, had one of also the great iconic shots when he went up
to Stanford.
Stanford. Mm-hmm. Between the two Collins twins and scored to beat them by one up there. So
that was the last second shot, and the crazy place was rocking. The basket was moving when he hit that shot.
Absolutely. Yeah, he was tough, and you just couldn't move him down low, you know. And he was also a darn good shooter. You were
mm-hmm.
there, Steve.
Yes.
Would face up to 15 and had a nice shot, but he was just tough as nails and just a rock down there. And the guys really liked him. He was a good teammate, worked hard. He came in a lot of nights afterwards, worked with gloves on, with his ball handling, and a lot of extra shooting, a lot of extra time. So, yeah, he was a good player.
A lot of the guys that you must be very proud of, not that you're not proud of all of them, obviously, but Richard's doing what he's doing now, had a great career, now on TV and being Richard, just being Richard because he talks a lot and is very bright. Jason Terry, who's being Jason Terry, now on TV as well. You have all these guys doing TV work, and the one thing that you guys allowed him to do, let these kids to do, was one, talk to the media, be themselves, and if they said crazy things, well, that's kind of who they were. It was part of growing up.
Yeah, and Channing's doing a lot of stuff. He and Richard, I've seen them on some things together. Even Gilbert, I think, has a podcast or something out there. So, you know, and a lot of them are coaching. Josh is coaching. Jason Gardner's coaching. Obviously,
Damon.
Luke is coaching. Damon is coaching. A lot of the guys are coaching. And probably all of that, Steve, kind of ties in. And that was one of the things that we did with the program is give them, you guys access to them and try to, you know, educate them a little bit in their freshman years to how to deal with the media. Although Andre has some, you know, again, you go back to his book and read the part, particularly when he got to the pro level, and the whole media thing really changed there for Andre and how he saw things. But I thought at Arizona we did a good job and educated the kids, and then you guys were fair and not picking at them or anything else that I was ever aware of. And so I thought it was a pretty good relationship, and that's probably where they learned how to get in front of a microphone and speak and you know, voice their opinions and everything else. And probably some crazy things were said, but not anything too outlandish that I was ever aware of.
Sure. No. And you had some players. What are the good guys now, you know, kind of different back in the day, with Salim? Misunderstood, but probably still, and Andre referred to him in the book, that he was easily the best shooter in college basketball.
Yeah, he, you know, when we do our workouts, Steve, he absolutely hated to miss a shot. I've never seen anything like it before or since, but, you know, he'd be out there 17 in a row, 18 in a row, some crazy number, and then he'd miss one, and I mean, it was just distressing to him. But yeah, he, and you know, I've always felt a bit that there's something that left-handers have. They've got just some sort of a knack, and not everybody is good as Salim, but left-handers have that great knack for shooting, a great feel for it, and then he was just off the charts. And you, again, you were there and saw someone, I think, what, UCLA at our gym, and that he was out there about 5 feet behind the arc, and popped one and beat Oklahoma State with a great shot. He was a great shooter, but again, he worked at it. Everything was the same, repetition. And he really, really worked at it, took great pride in his shooting, but hated, absolutely hated, Steve, to miss a shot. And I think that's one of the things that made him so darn good.
Yeah, no question. You're talking about the shot over Aflalo, maybe from the NBA three-pointer, maybe five feet beyond that.
Yeah, absolutely. That was, and there wasn't any question. I mean, I've seen it back on YouTube or something a number of times, and you see the bench, and they knew the minute it left Salim's hand, they were up and they were cheering and everything, and you knew right away that thing was going in. He was in balance, and boom, he could shoot. And I thought Andre summed it up pretty well. I mean, people have talked about J.J. Redick or Steve Kerr or anybody else that was great shooters, but the best statistically. Was Salim Stoudemire, you know, and he goes through that in the book and points it out pretty clearly.
Right. Well, the good thing is you had some great moments, great teams. As you look back, how do you reflect on your time at U of A?
They were really, really, really terrific years. I came in 89, just missed Sean and Anthony mm-hmm. Cook and Kenny Lofton. But there were great players there, you know, Muehlbach and Matt Othick, Judd Bushler I was lucky to have for a year, Harvey Mason was there.
Brian Williams?
Chris Million, Brian Williams was there. Those early years were terrific. Sean Rooks, Ed Stokes, I mean, you go up and down the line. And then the Clyde Damon era, Bibby and all those guys in that era. So, you know, to be honest with you, Steve, you couldn't ask for more out of a career. But I think the blessing is that, you know, I started coaching an eighth grade team in Chicago, and those were absolutely wonderful years. I still hear from some of those guys, Steve, and that was really, really fun. Put together a whole program, and I mean, we're not talking elite level or anything, but that was a great deal of fun. And then got to the University of Iowa from there. Loved that experience. my alma mater, had a great year at Tulsa. Loved my head coaching position at Northern Illinois, and then down at Arizona. It was, you couldn't ask for more. And the Arizona years were terrific with great people. Obviously, winning was fun, but we had great people, good people on the staff, good media, everything. It was a terrific experience.
And maybe lastly, even though I was kind of wrapping it up, but and I'll have you on in the future, but that 97 year was kind of beyond explanation. You guys caught fire at the right time, beat probably the best team in college football, basketball with Kansas. And did you guys even kind of believe what was going on? Because it just caught fire and things just went bonkers.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and we've talked on this before. The great experience was we were in Memphis for the first two games, and then all the kids kind of got out and down around Memphis and Beale Street, and that was fun. And maybe that was one of the things that what brought them closer together. I don't know that, but that was a great, great experience there. And then I don't know if you were with us, but we got in late to Birmingham the next round.
Yes.
When we
mm-hmm.
were just before Kansas, got in late. Our practice time was a little screwed up, and there were some issues, and then went out and beat Kansas. And then the next game was a tough game against Providence. I think we went overtime, if I'm not
yes.
mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Tough, tough team, big, strong guys. But, I don't know. I mean, you don't know on those things, Steve. And going back even to the Iowa days, you know, we had two great games to go to the Final Four. You're sitting there and you just, it's kind of beyond your imagination as to what's going on. You know, you know you've practiced, you know you've done this, but the 97 year was just kind of magical. And you're absolutely right, just caught fire at the right time and good group of kids. And we had four good perimeter guys and four good inside guys, I guess. Everybody forgets Donnell Harris
right.
hit some free throws in the overtime that got us over the hump. So
it was
a fantastic year.
And it's funny, I still believe this, that you won the tournament a couple times, but you really won it in the first round when you were down by that double digits against South Alabama, and you guys found a way.
Yeah, well, don't bring it up, Steve. It still upsets my stomach. Everybody was sitting on the bench six of their stomach, and then I think it was Jason Terry that
kind
of picked it up and got hot and got us over the hump. So, yeah, that was a big – but I can remember looking up at my wife with maybe 7 minutes to go or something, and it was trouble. And, I mean, oh, my gosh, everybody was sick. And we pulled it out, and that was a great relief, and then went on and beat a good College of Charleston team, and then, you know, the rest is kind of history.
Right. Well, Jim, thanks a bunch. Enjoy talking to you about this. We'll probably do it again at some point.
Yep, very good, Steve. Look forward to it. Thanks.
Take care. Thanks a bunch.
Okay, yep. Bye.
But that was Jim Rosborough, assistant coach at Pima with the women, and longtime, obviously, assistant coach under Lute for a number of years here in the last decade, 15 years ago, here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Let's take a quick break. I know we're running late, Tom, and come back. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm Steve Rivera. I love that conversation with Jim Rosborough. A lot of fun, a lot of reminiscing. Did you remember a lot of that, Tom?
Yeah, some of the, not the older teams, the 97, yeah.
Yeah, behind the scenes. Did you have to get a Kleenex or a towel to kind of wipe the tears?
No.
Those are the good old days, really good old days.
The fun days.
Yeah, kind of how I became more read, I guess. I was able to write my first book in 97 after they won the title. And then, you know, kind of start my book writing stuff that I do. Because of that successful program that I covered, I used to cover.
Well,
go ahead.
Which team did you enjoy covering the most back then?
Oh, that's a good question. 2001, like I said, with Richard and Luke and Jason Gardner and Gilbert, Lauren Woods, Gene. I remember at the Final Four in 2001, some of the reporters had never heard of Gene Edgerson or Richard or had talked to them much. And they would go at the Final Four, and they'd all have their little rooms to go. And one of the guys, I think it was from the Houston Chronicle at the time, he says, God, he's such a great interview. And he was talking about Richard. I said, you haven't talked to Gene yet, have you? Because Gene would just talk and talk about a lot of different things, and he says, oh no, I haven't talked to him. So all these guys were talkers, great with the media, didn't hold back of what they had to say, and we kind of talked about with Roz. I mean, to me, that's kind of how college is. You just kind of grow up, you learn the goods and the bads of life, and when you're a ball player, this is what you do. You talk to the media and you just tell your stories. And a good group. There's no surprise to me that, you know, Richard's in the media now. Gene is a cop now, but he was with the Globetrotters and all that. Luke is doing what he's doing now in Sacramento or in the NBA. Jason's a coach in Chicago. I think it's in Chicago or Indianapolis. So a lot of the guys are successful, not because of this specifically, but they were exposed to the real world, if you will, and they knew how to handle the real world.
It seems obvious that the ones that became successful after college, they're going to have to deal with the media. They're going to have to,
oh, yes,
to deal with that reality that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So back in the day, when you guys had access to the players,
mm-hmm,
you think that's how they developed their abilities,
yeah,
to deal with the press,
well,
and deal with the media?
It helped because, one, you have to be that way anyway. I know Channing Frye was one of those very smart, articulate, spoke well about the basketball program, about life. He'd always come up with these great analogies. In fact, he and I have been communicating off and on in the last couple of weeks because I want him on the show. He was just one of those bright guys. He got it. If you don't get it, you just don't get it. But if you get it, you get a lot of perks when you get it. And these guys did because they realized a long time ago that if you're going to be in the limelight, you have to kind of take advantage of it too. Back in about 92, 93, Damon was one of the best guards in the country. And going, well, 94 actually, 94, 95, in his senior year. And he was this 5'10" guard, a fantastic player, still probably the second best player in the program history, where we talk to him all the time, and he says, you know, it's not that I don't like you or like you. I know you guys are good for me and talking to us because it helped him become this guy, publicity-wise. And everybody else got to know him through the media.
And as you mentioned and as Jim mentioned, a number of them have gone on to careers
In the business,
in media,
mm-hmm,
of one's form or another.
Yeah, no question. A lot of them. And it's because they gave them that leeway to make their own mistakes. And, you know, they'd say some crazy things, too, and they would get in trouble for it, probably behind the scenes. Gilbert did a lot because he said a lot of crazy stuff. But it was who they are. Gilbert was a crazy guy. He still kind of is. Says what he wants and says what he feels. And, you know, Agent Zero is still kind of making news out there because he is who he is. You can't change who you are. You know that.
Yes.
Nor should you.
But maybe you can modify it a little bit.
You could alter it a bit. Yes.
I mean, you can gain some confidence, like we were talking about. If you're going to be put in the spotlight, and if you learn that in an earlier time in your life, in your college career, say, as an example, mm-hmm. you're going to be better off when you become a pro or get into the media or get into some other business that's related to sports.
Sure. In fact, I have yet to get Andre's book. I was hoping to get him on the show through his publicist to get one sent to me. I'll ask that again. But he said something, and Roz is the one who talked about it. What he said about him growing up, or not growing up, but having to deal with the media here and then going to the NBA. I'm sure the NBA was kind of brutal with him because he went to Philadelphia, and he was very... We treated him with kid gloves here. Because, let me tell you something, I've written 2,000-3,000 stories about the program over the last 20-some years, and more than that in my career, but 99% of them have been positive. It's that 1% that people remember, but still 98 or 99% of them have been very positive.
Well, you're looking for the story.
Yeah, that's
when,
all
when you're in a big market like New York or Philadelphia, you're looking for the quote. That's the only way you're going to get on the evening sports on TV is if you can get a quote from somebody that's going to be a little sensational.
Yeah, I agree with you a little. Here we just want the story and to tell a good story.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that they realize that. We're not out to get anybody or whatever. We're just trying to tell a story, to do our job and tell a story. But I thought today was a good show.
All right. I think it was, and I enjoyed it. And what do we have on tap for tomorrow?
Oh, you know what? I forgot to ask you, because I have another assistant coach tomorrow, Phil Johnson, who was in that era too. So we'll kind of have some of the same stories, because Phil was an assistant coach, assistant to Roz and to Lute back in the day.
Well, he might have some more stories.
He will, in fact. He has a great story. In fact, he may have helped them tremendously win that title in 97. They were on the road, and I hope he talks about it. We're in San Francisco.
So we'll have him. Anything else for tomorrow?
Nothing that I have slated right now.
But you're
now.
Working on it.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Okay, Tom, thanks for a good day here on Eye on the Ball.